Oh, all man.
Right, let's do a podcast. Boo, 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 boo. Hello, friends and fiends. Welcome to Bugs Need Heroes, a podcast where an artist and an entomologist team up to illustrate the inspiring abilities of insects by creating bug-themed superheroes. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kelly.
Producer Derek and Desdemona are also here. Before we get started creating this bug-inspired hero, what's bugging you, Kelly?
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you. So in my building here, we have lots of dogs. And if I'm on the elevator with your dog, I will politely try to pet that dog. I love all the dogs. Assuming it looks like it's okay, I'm not going to like touch a stranger's dog. But so I'm downstairs waiting to get a package from our front desk. And a little dog walks by me with its owner and stops, runs over to me, real pumped. So I lean down to like pet her. And the owner looks at me and goes, "Does my dog know you?"
I love the implication that the dog may know people, but they do not.
We have dog walkers in the building, so maybe they thought, maybe I met this dog on an elevator with their dog walker or something, but I go, "I don't think so. I don't recognize this dog." I go, "But dogs tend to like me, and I'm glad to know her now." The guy was so confused. It was a That's great question.
So funny.
"Does my dog know
Does
you?
My dog, excuse me.
Excuse me." And then he like laughed all the way to the elevator, so it was fine.
He just has a very gregarious dog. It's fine. Fine.
I think I just attract dogs. I'm a dog. I have two cats. If you've listened to the pod before, you know that. But I'm a dog. I'm a dog lady. I had a dog growing up. Her name was Lady. She was fantastic. I miss having a dog. I won't in an apartment building, but yeah. What about you, Amanda? What's bugging you?
I'm a little tired today. You may be able to see my day after makeup on my eyes because I wear makeup so rarely. We went to Cary Elwes last night.
Oh, I love him.
In Portland. We watched Princess Bride on the big screen with everyone like quoting along. That was very fun. And then he comes out after and does like a moderated question and answer. I wish there'd been audience questions, but there wasn't. But I'm sure that's to keep it canned so that he knows like more or less what's coming his way.
Yeah.
But yeah, he told some stories. He's very charming.
Oh, I'm sure.
And of course, I mean, how could you not be? You're Cary Elwes.
I'm a big Dread Pirate Roberts fan, of course.
Yes, yes. I wanted to get shirts for my husband and I that said, "I'm not a witch, I'm your wife." You know, get back witch, you know, but I couldn't find ones I liked enough online and I wasn't willing to make my own. So we just wore regular clothes.
Aw.
Like a couple of lamos. But there was some very good cosplays there. People really whipped out their Buttercup Wesley. Really, I guess, technically.
Oh, that's fun.
Pirate Roberts.
Your day after makeup is beautiful, Amanda.
Thank you.
You look lovely this morning.
Got home at midnight, hit the bed, makeup. Yeah, that's what I like to see. So, that was fun. But today is a very special episode. Today on a very special episode. Of Bugs Need Heroes. I always have to do the PBS voice when you do that.
No, no teen drama. We're good. It's not that kind of episode.
No teen drama. No, no clones of historical figures happening here. But we have a special guest today. Kelly, why don't you do the intro since you always do the intro of our guests?
Oh, do I? I guess I do.
You do. Because you always know them.
The guests are usually other scientists that I'm friends with. Well, I hopefully this person will become our new friend, Roger McMullen, who has created a very cool children's comic book about cicadas. And we're excited to talk about cicadas today because of the upcoming brood explosion.
Brood explosion.
Which I'm excited about. Roger, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Or thanks.
Cicadas.
Cicadas. I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So, you know, we've got the double brood action coming up, and were you inspired by this super brood happening, or do you love cicadas in general?
I love the periodical cicadas specifically. Cicadas are awesome generally, but my original fascination happened back in 2004 with brood 10, commonly confused with brood X. It's Roman numerals. So that happened, and then 2021, I originally wanted to do the graphic novel in preparation for that, That's kind of my home state, Maryland. I'm from Maryland originally.
Oh, and, okay.
Route 10 is my home cicadas. I'm in Utah now, so we don't even get the periodical cicadas here. But yeah,
you still get the dog days, right?
Yeah, we don't have dog days here. There's a couple. No? I don't even know. I'm too new to Utah to know like the actual name.
Who's around?
But they're a lot smaller than the dog day.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, the graphic novel has trickled over the last 3 years since 2021, and it's finally out in time for the double emergence of Brood 13 and 19. So exciting.
Yeah, very cool. Can you tell us a little bit about the graphic novel and what's the storyline?
Yeah, so I really love education. I love that it's interactive, educational, blah, blah, blah. But I think a lot of times we miss because we're just like, let's hammer in those facts. And so instead of giving a story, which is a lot more memorable and fun, we just hammer the facts. And so this takes kind of a story approach, and it's two squirrels, Faye and Cyrus. And basically, Faye is a prepper, Cyrus is a foodie, and they confront the periodical cicadas, and there's drama. They're scared of them, even though in real life, you know, they just munch on them. And so they're initially terrified of them. I'll just read the synopsis in my radio voice.
Yeah, sure.
Fixated on preparing for the winter, Squirrel Faye drags her brother Cyrus out to forage. But when Faye leaves to hide an acorn, Cyrus comes face to face with a raven and a warning. Millions of periodical cicadas emerge from the ground. Fleeing for their lives, Cyrus and Faye try everything to defeat them. Exhausted and with no place to run, they collapse, only to learn that the cicadas won't win this fight. And then there's an illustrated epilogue. It's hosted by the cicada nymph, and he kind of reviews the facts along the way, which you mentioned.
It's exciting. Great. It's very cute.
My 5-year-old son really enjoyed it. His favorite part was definitely the prophecy raven. Part of that might be that I was using a silly voice when I read it to him. But he liked the prophecy raven a lot. He thought that was very funny. Yeah. If
that's it gives my favorite part too.
Oh, if it gives you a hint of what he's into, he likes, you know, Avatar: The Last Airbender, that sort of stuff. So he likes the prophecy raven, which I also enjoy because I feel like ravens telling prophecies is always a good trope. Like, just use that whenever possible. Whenever you could inject, like, even in a story, it doesn't make any sense. You're in the middle of a rom-com, and then a raven comes out. I was like, ah, beware the stroke of three. You know, you're like, oh my gosh.
It's going to happen.
Oh no. Like, just suddenly change genres. Now it's a romantasy. I'm into it.
So Amanda, you've never seen a cicada?
I've never seen a cicada. I mean, it's very possible I have, because oftentimes I feel like the bugs you know and the bugs I know are not the same. We're not the same, you and I, Kelly, because we're on totally opposite ends of a continent.
Separate coasts.
Separate coasts. West Coast, Best Coast.
Oh, how dare and... you. East Coast, Beast Coast, baby.
But I just they're not around here. I feel like it seems silly that they're not, because we have so many trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It seems like there should be cicadas here, because I think there probably are cicadas here, but they're just not these big broody guys that you hear about all the time. So
Amanda,
I just don't know about them. What?
Have you heard the trees scream?
I've never heard trees scream. Every time there's screaming in the woods, it's because of... I almost made a really dark joke there. I'm so sorry. Every time there's screaming in the woods, it's usually tracked down to a goat or something, you know?
A goat?
Goats love to scream. Maybe you don't know that, Kelly, because you're from the big city. But goats love to scream.
But you just have goats wandering your forest screaming? What is the Pacific Northwest?
You've heard of Bigfoot. Everything's Bigfoot. I guess the screams could have been Bigfoot. I guess that's also possible.
Fair. Well, so cicadas are kind of little cuties, I think. They look sort of prehistoric in their nymphal form. The adults will lay their eggs. The babies are, they've got like little, we're all making little clawed hands.
We're all making little T-Rex arms.
Little T-Rex arms. So the best part about, I think, cicadas is when the nymphs start emerging from the dirt. And they start making their way up those trees. And they're these little brown husky boys with a... I still can't believe you've never seen one.
I know.
It's just wild to me.
I've seen them in Animal Crossing, which we discussed, I think, in a Mole Cricket episode. Which, oh, I guess that hasn't come out yet by the time this airs. But I've seen them in Animal Crossing, and I've seen them, though there's two different Pokemon based on cicadas, one of which is like the husk of a cicada, and one of which is like actually the cicada. Other than that, it's only through internet memes about like the tree screaming.
They do make very loud screams. It's like 90 decibels of shrieking male cicadas.
That's so loud. It's one of those things where like you say a thing, 90 decibels, and people don't really know how loud that is. It's just like meh. But like, isn't, I feel like a chainsaw is 100 or something like that. So it's pretty dang loud.
Oh, Roger's got a plushie.
Oh, yay! We love when there's plushies.
So this is this adorable plushie from Tyler Thrasher. He's this amazing artist, but it's actually, it unzips to reveal a real cicada or an adult cicada.
So it's that's cool. That's a cool toy. Oh, I'm sorry. That is educational.
Pretty awesome. But yeah, so the husk, like you're saying, the husk is basically what the nymphs look like. I mean, that is.
It's so, the same. Yeah. Oh, are you pressing the buttons, Amanda?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking to see. Derek sent me a link to cicada noises.
Hold on. You got to hear it. Yeah.
You want our impersonations instead?
Yeah. It's just a high pitched.
Yeah, I'm gonna listen to this. I'm trying to be away from the microphone so that it's not horrible. Oh, that's horrible. That's a terrible noise. The Oregon one that I just listened to sounds like someone has left their very old cell phone on a table, on a desk, and it's just like buzzing its way across the wood. That's a horrible noise. I'm glad there's not a million of those buzzing all the time.
There are lots of different calls depending on the cicada species, and they also, so there's lots of like fun little nerdy facts that we can get into, but like the females, they will flick their wings, so it's just kind of like a there's a really fun video on the internet you can watch of David Attenborough actually like attracting a female male with the flicking of his wings, and it'll follow him across this branch by him snapping.
Oh, pretty cool. It's
a pretty similar sound. And then they also, the pharaoh cicada, which is one of the most common periodical cicadas, when they chorus, so they all sing together, it's kind of like, it sounds like Rage Against the Machine's wah-wah pedal. It's like,
it's
pretty awesome. Like, it's really fun. So, and yes, there's like the horrible, just like, tsh-sh-sh. So I think that is one of the more common ones. So it's fun.
Yeah, definitely. Here, I don't know. I mostly, it sounds like a high-pitched sort of keening to like, to me out here in the east. That's probably just the species we have over here. I remember I was in probably middle school during, I think it was I don't know if it was an emergency or if it was a dog day, because I can't remember what year it was, but the dog days are just the regular cicadas we get in the summer, and my friend and I were walking to the library, and there were just cicadas everywhere. We walked by like a cemetery, and there were cicadas over there, and we would poke them with the stick. They'd be on the ground, and you poke them, and they'd make this insane noise, like this vibrating. And we're like, holy crap. And they'd stick to our clothes while we were walking, because they were just, they're not great flying. They're not super great flyers. So they just kind of land wherever they do. I'll never forget that though.
Everywhere you go, Kelly, there seems to be an explosion of bugs. Like, coming for you. Between the cicadas and the lantern flies. Are you guys just like waiting for waves of bugs? Anytime you're like, bad news, it's the bug season. Some people have rainy seasons. You guys have bug season.
It's just me, I think.
It's just you personally. Bad news, you guys.
I'm just summoning.
In the northern Midwest, they get like the mayflies, which are also like a huge plague, and just not plague. Sorry, shouldn't use that word. But
what a loaded bug word you've used.
But it's like this periodical cicadas, where it's just like, holy cow, nature makes so many cool things, and it's just like the intense, like, I don't know. It just fascinates me how there's just so many of them in just such a concentrated area. It's just like, I don't know, it just looks so cool and it's amazing. Like you were saying, Gilly, like the walking to school or seeing whatever, they're just like on every leaf, everything. On like
everything.
The trees, on the bushes, on like the sidewalks, and they're climbing up the thing. There's like massive shells across, like all around the base of the tree just from flying. Technically, by the way, exuvae is the, am I saying that right? Is the proper term for the shells, the exoskeletons they shed.
Yeah, the exuvia.
The husk.
Exuvia. Thank you.
Exuvia. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we like special terms for stuff, even though it's, you know.
Other bugs we've done, they're usually making noise to find a special friend. The noise is the Tinder of bug world. They're like, hey guys, it's me. Is that true with the cicadas too? Are they also trying to find a lady wife? Or in this case, maybe a husband. Sounds like the girls make more noise.
The girls only make the clicking. So they don't actually make, so they have something called timbles. It's kind of just behind their, I'll say head. Mm-hmm. It's kind of between thorax and abdomen. Just below their wings. Let's say rib cage for humans.
Yeah, for a good comparison for people, it'd be the rib cage.
All right,
and so they kind of look like ribs, basically. The timbles, they make the cool sound, terrifying sound that people, some people hate and gives them tinnitus and everything else. It's basically their ribs are kind of, it's not ribs, but they're like a bunch of sheets. And the kind of the comparison I make is it's like a plastic Solo cup and you just like are clicking it and you're just like, but at like incredible speed of like, I don't remember what it is, 300 decibel or 300 times a second or something like that. And so it's just click, 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 click. And it's just doing that back and forth and back and forth. And then they have like bagpipe style, their abdomen is just filled with air and it's just pumping out this like air to kind of make that thing click, make the timbals click. And it just, and so.
Wow. So they really dedicate a significant amount of their body shape to making noise.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when you're only alive as an adult for a couple weeks to mate.
As we've discussed, like, poor bugs, always. Only an adult for like a couple of days, couple of weeks.
So your prime directive is to find a mate. So you have to be loud and you have to be attractive. And there's really no other reason to exist at that point, other than to find a mate.
And what's the meaning of life, says Kelly? To find a mate.
Find a mate. Have a
not very progressive of you, Kelly.
Have a brief good time and then die.
Live fast, die young, Kelly. 2024.
Game style.
Yeah, just make a ton of noise, cicada style. All right.
Cicada wisdom. But, I mean, it is also interesting, too. I mean, lots of pent-up sexual frustration there with their 17 years underground, or 13, depending on the brood. And then, you know, they're only up there for 4 weeks.
You got to get it all out.
Yeah, that's right.
So when they're in their brood stage, when they're just nymphing around, are they moving around or are they like
nymphing around?
they're nymphing around. Or are they like, I've been imagining them as like asleep this whole time. I don't know why I thought they were asleep, but are they still doing nymphy things or are they asleep down there? Or do we not know? It's just a mystery.
There's a lot of eating that's going on.
Okay.
They need to eat as nymphs. And they're sap suckers, so, you know.
Okay, so they're finding a tree and
they're eating trees. So tree soda. So basically, they're just sitting on their couch, and again, I'm super paraphrasing, but they're sitting on their couch sucking from their straw for like, you know, however many or sort of 17 years.
13. And so there's a couple of different.
And there's a couple of instar stages, which is kind of like their molts, basically. Yep. And so they go through, I think it's 4 or 5 molts, and then they emerge. But yeah, they're just sitting down there with their piercing mouth parts, their beak.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy life for a cicada nymph. You're just relaxing, munching until it's the big day, basically.
And so the little nymph arms are for scooping the dirt, I assume?
So they can so they can get out of the soil up onto the tree.
Oh,
and then for grasping. Because they get up a little bit. Some of them get pretty high up into the tree before they decide. Well, they don't decide. Their bodies go, it's time.
Now.
And they, so Amanda, they're kind of interesting. You'll see the nymph up holding onto the tree, and then its back just splits open.
Yeah.
And the adult emerges from the back.
I've seen some pictures of that, and it seems precarious. Like the nymph form latches onto the bark, and then out comes their final form. And it seems like some of them might drop off into nothing before, because it's horizontal as they hang on and stuff. But I mean, I guess when there's millions of you, it only takes one, right?
Yeah. Some of them are going to fail. Not every insect during that final molt, or even throughout the molting process, through all the instars, there's always a chance to fail, and they'll get stuck, or a body part won't form the right way.
I've heard
they won't make it past that stage.
That's what gets lobsters, is that eventually, a lobster doesn't die. I don't
know. Oh, it just can't molt anymore? I don't know.
It just can't molt anymore, and then it eventually just can't live any longer.
I can't comment on the lobster thing. I don't know.
We need a lobster. We need a sea bug man.
Sea bug person. So they go through these stages, these molts, these instars. I think it's 5 for cicadas. And they have that chance to come out. So the adult comes out, and they're soft, because they've had to be soft to be encased in their old skin.
Crunchy on the outside, gooey on the inside.
Yeah, but this time they're just gooey on the outside and the inside when they emerge. And they have to pump hemolymph, and we've talked about that before. Hemolymph is bug blood, basically. And they push it through their limbs, and they do a little stretch, and they push it through their wings, and you actually see the wings unfold like a butterfly.
They don't have wings when they're a nymph, right?
No, that's
that'd be weird.
That's
to
an
like...
adult thing. Oh, to come out and suddenly you can fly now.
Right. But those wings are fully formed inside of the nymph for a while. That's crazy.
One day maybe we'll do a whole episode just on insect metamorphosis. But
yeah.
So they have to come out and harden. So their shell, their exoskeleton has to harden. And then they're ready to go. Then they can start crushing their solo cups and making their sounds.
Yeah, exactly. getting turned with their solo cups. Yeah. I've seen the pumping with the butterfly wings. You know, they always hang there for a second and you see them pump
it's
it out.
So, beautiful process to watch.
Yeah.
Same thing with our buddies, the cicadas.
They have such big wings for you to tell me that they're not very good flyers. Beautiful, glass wings.
Gorgeous wings. They tend to fly into everything. They're certainly capable of flying, but they don't seem to discern what direction they're going.
Right. They're just go now. And then they bump into young middle school Kelly right in the face. Shame.
And I've loved them ever since.
The rom-com I was talking about actually stars you and a cicada. So,
Amanda, if you were looking at cicadas, what bugs do you think they'd be related to?
Oh, I don't know. They, like you said, they seem so prehistoric. They have such an interesting, little hunch body shape, almost dark crystal like, where they're like. they're kind of housefly-ish. I think I'm being influenced by the. Oh no, because I've gotten this wrong before. Do they only have 2 wings? Or do they have a secret second set of wings that I don't know about? Oh no.
Think about their body shape.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm looking at pictures of
Roger, do you know now. What we'll put Roger in on the quiz too. Do you know what bugs cicadas are related to?
I do, which I was surprised by, to be honest. My understanding is the tree hopper, they are related to the tree hopper, right?
Yeah, leaf hoppers, tree hoppers, plant hoppers, yeah. Amanda, do you know what those are?
No. I don't know. I've now Googled that as well, and I can see it. It seems like a cicada without a head is the
That's
which yeah. It's hard because I feel like this is also very grasshopper shaped.
Yeah.
So there's a very good jumping shape that seems to be what the leafhopper is going for.
Well, they're also related to our mortal enemies over here, the spotted lanternfly.
Oh no.
If you take a look at their their body plan, you can kind of see that. Do you have lantern flies where you are, Roger?
Not where we are. It's not mostly yet. East Coast, East and Midwest, I think.
Yeah. So it's only a matter of time. You'll see them eventually.
They're coming. They're coming. Yeah.
That's in what your raven should be yelling about.
In 10 years, the raven will be like, they're coming! The red-winged menace from the east!
What? I am curious. I have never done enough research. Why are they considered so like invasive and evil? Like, everyone's like, abolish them, kill them. It's just because they attack or they like fuel the ecosystem, or
they come out. So there's a ton of them, and they're capable of moving around pretty easily on their own, let alone via human transport. But they target things like grapes. So if you like wine, it's a bit of a problem.
That's what it always comes back down to, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Again, this is lanternflies, not the cicadas. Or cicadas are buddies. But the lanternflies target a lot of agriculture, fruit trees, wine, all the good stuff we want to eat. So there was a bit of a concern that they were going to be a problem for our food supplies. And they also drink the sap of our local trees. No one wants to lose, they like oaks and maples, and we don't want to lose our native trees either.
I think anytime there's suddenly a lot of something, like
it's worrying.
You're like, oh, this is not what was happening before. We need to find out why. Suddenly there's a lot of bears. You're going to want to know why there's a lot of bears.
I wish there were a lot of bears. I don't see enough bears.
Well, as long as it's not cougars, because as you know, my fear of cougars grows by the day.
Oh, man. That's...
You guys got like cougars as mascots and stuff. Oh man.
Yeah.
So my experience with destroying bugs, not lantern flies, in Utah. Although maybe soon, sounds like. We drove down to Utah a lot as kids, and you get to Utah and your front of your minivan is absolutely covered in crickets, and what I'm now am under the impression is locusts at all times, because everyone wants to talk about locusts all the time. But in your book, you're very clear that locusts and cicadas are not the same thing, and you want to be clear about that.
Yes, our little cicada nymph at the end, it makes that a very emphatic point. And the reason for that is that when colonists originally came to the United States, or America, they mistook cicadas, the periodical cicadas, as locusts, because it was the closest thing they'd ever heard of, and also they look like a plague, and they're like, in the biblical plague.
Oh yeah,
plague,
when there's 10 million of this one thing. Yeah.
And so they're like, they're gonna eat our crops. But they soon discover, cicadas are super chill. They those sucking mouth parts, all they do, they just want to suck sap. And for the most part, when they're above ground, they're not gonna do anything. Worst thing that they would do is the females, when they lay their eggs, they use their ovipositor, their big harpoon in their backside, to lay their eggs, and in about a branch the size of like a pencil, more or less, the thickness of a pencil. And so if you have small shrubs or if you have saplings that are growing, that's like so when they lay their eggs, oftentimes the eggs will grow inside the branch, but it often kills like the end of the branch. And so they call this flagging. And what happens is basically like in mature trees, it's just like basically does like a little prune job, and like all the little external branches that are, that pencil size or about that, they just fall off. But in a sapling, a smaller branch, smaller plant, that's a little bit more problematic, and that can like damage your tree. So that's one of the concerns people often have is like, they killed my plants. Like, it's a plague. There's so many insects, whatever.
Yeah.
But the answer is no, they're totally harmless and friendly. They don't bite. Yeah. They don't sting. They're amazing little buddies, and they're very derpy. And it's like,
great. They're super derpy. Super, super derpy. Yeah.
The eyes on either side of the head is very charming, but I can't imagine it's good for sights to be like, I'm a hammerhead shark on land.
I love your artwork, Roger. Your drawings of the cicadas are so cute. Just adorable. Did you do all the art? Did you do the drawings?
So I did all the illustration, and then I hired another guy to do the coloring, because as I'm sure Amanda can share, that's like the longest and hardest part.
It does take a long time. I recently got hired to be a colorist for something else, and I was like, okay, all right, here we go. Let's do it. Let's add some gradients. All right.
Yeah. So back to the derpy thing, though, too. Yeah. Like the flight, we talked about, you know, flying and wings and things like that, but I think that adds to the derpiness. Like, for the most part, like Kelly was saying, like these periodical cicadas are trying to conserve energy. They're just there to sing or scream and mate. And so they're trying to conserve all the energy for just that. And so for the most part, like this, again, people are always nervous because there's so many of them, but they're really just like, they're just chilling on these like branches, on the leaves. And then like when they do fly, it's like a struggle. It's like you fed a butterfly like, or just alcohol, like pure alcohol. they just kind of flap and flutter, and they eventually make it to something. And hopefully it was the thing they wanted to land on. So it's...
Yeah, oh, update. I did Google, and the cicada does have four wings. Yeah. It is not a dioptera. It is
not a diptera. Yeah.
That's the one.
Dipteras are our order of flies, and it means two-winged. Because they have haltiers under that first set of wings, which aren't wings anymore. They're just little, we talked about those before, little pressure sensors.
Someday I'll learn that bugs have four wings.
Have four wings.
Unless they have two. But in my mind, they have two unless they have four. I don't know why I got that wrong at some point in my education, but I did.
This isn't that Star Trek Next Gen episode where there's four lights.
There are four lights!
There are four wings.
Well, that's how I feel. That's how I feel about my bug education, is that there have been four wings this whole time, and it was a lot.
Well, we've been talking this so much about what we like about cicadas, and Roger's given us a wonderful overview of who these little dudes and dudettes are. If we were to make a superhero out of said cicada, Roger, what do you think their superpowers are?
Oh, man. I wrote a huge list because they're so awesome, but let me name the brief version, and then we can dive into those if that's helpful.
Yeah, please. So,
here's the top five. Number one is patience. We have synchronized screaming or like loud sound. We have strength in numbers. Mm-hmm. Feeds the forest ecosystem. That's not really like a superpower, but it's cool. Feeding, you know, that maternal, paternal love. And then metamorphosis, which is, you know, transforming from one thing to another. So patience, synchronized screaming or loud sounds, strength in numbers, feeds the forest ecosystem, and metamorphosis.
Awesome. Awesome. All good powers. We can add flight into that too, even though it's a pretty basic power. It's the superpower I forget to add to every single superhero we make.
It's just across the board. Most heroes can fly. It's fine. Really, most not being heroes. Able to fly is the thing. If you can't fly, it's because they haven't made a cartoon about you yet. Because that's why Superman can fly, is because they were like, we can't possibly keep animating him jumping over these buildings. Just let him fly.
It's very annoying.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking like 1940s animation too, where they're like, it's like six drawings just repeated in different orders. And they're like, yeah, this is a cartoon, you guys. Don't worry about it.
Amanda, what shape do you think you're going to make this hero?
I don't know. I'm being influenced heavily by Brood X, which sounds a lot like Wolverine's Experiment X to me.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of want to do his like nymph arms, but like... He had the powers of a cicada in some sort of terrible Canadian experiment. Where
we love our Canadian listeners.
We love a Canadian, and we specifically love Logan. So,
yeah,
I like Logan because I like Logan best when he's like a little bit, like he's like the reluctant hero. That's when I like Wolverine best, especially if he has a tiny girl sidekick. That's when he's at his most primo. Logan is when he's like, ah. I guess I have to take care of this tiny child now, because I'm not going to let her die in these woods, but
We should also consider perhaps the arch nemesis of the cicada, which we did a whole episode on.
Yes, I was thinking about that last night.
The cicada killer.
We have to be able to set it in the same universe as, like, because she's ostensibly a hero. We put her on a hero team, but
she's on the B team.
only barely did we allow her onto the B team. You have killer in your name. It's hard to be a hero. I'm just saying. But so we need to put this in the same universe as the B team so that she just has this terrible rivalry with him and that he has done nothing to deserve, to be clear. He is an innocent little friend and he's like, please don't murder me. And she's like, I'm going to. I'm definitely.
Please don't lay your eggs on me.
Please don't inject and let your children eat me from the inside.
Yeah. Have you what cicada killers are, Roger? Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We definitely had those growing up, like little holes, like next door, pretty nearby us. And so I was like, well, be careful when you walk by that little area, because there's, you know, there's little sand in their holes, and not sand, but yeah.
Yeah, they prefer to dig in like sandier, easier to dig through soils. They're so big. They're amazing. I love them. Yeah, I also love cicadas. Cool. You know.
I mean, the fact that they can haul a cicada is, I mean, they're massive, like wasp-like creatures, and they, yeah, again, just hauling a cicada, which is probably, and usually it's an annual cicada, not a periodical cicada, which is, the annuals are considerably bigger. Yeah, they're just, it's probably 2 to 3 times its body size, I would guess. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. They're just so... They're so big. But with that in mind, can you talk to us a little bit about predators and cicada and what satiation means, which you mentioned in your book?
Yeah. So I think that is one of the coolest things about periodical cicadas is predator satiation, which basically means that the cicadas, they emerge in such a in such numbers that and again, this is their only defense. They have no other, they're not poisonous they're not venomous. They don't bite. They don't sting. The only thing that they can do is they just emerge in such massive numbers that the predators, they come, they eat them, and they're all full and that's it. And there's still enough cicadas to survive. And
It's a horrible strategy for the individual. It is entirely based on, we need the species to survive. And so some of you may die, but that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
That's exactly it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I can't say that it's like an unknown strategy. I feel like rabbits do more or less the same thing. A lot of like your bottom of the tier prey animals are just like, we just got to have enough of you to make it through. It only takes one. Like octopus have like what, like 2 million eggs or whatever it is. Sea turtles have hundreds.
Derek is making the good point, the power of friendship.
Oh, that's beautiful. The power of friendship, of course, being that some of your friends will die, but it's for the greater good. So I'm not sure how much power of friendship that really is.
I mean, it's also been compared to the prisoner dilemma, where basically, you know, if you try to escape it's easier for, you know, to shoot kill, eat, whatever, the one rather than the hundreds that come out. And so, and there are stragglers, they call them, if they emerge too early or too late. But, you know, they're 17-year cicadas, and a lot of times, or often like the year before they are supposed to emerge, you'll see a couple of the periodical cicadas come out. And they're
year ahead of time, they'll come out and be like, we're here, we got this wrong.
Yep. And or they'll, you know, sleep in, and the next year they come out and they're like, oh, whoops, I guess I missed the boat, and they get eaten pretty quick.
And a lot of it depends on the climate in the region and how that shifts each year. And, you know, everything is so in nature, everything is so intimately tied together that if you have like something happening with warmth for that season, you can completely shift when everything starts to emerge. Sometimes if you get like a warm front in the beginning of the spring, a bunch of insects will emerge, but the migrating birds haven't gotten here yet. So timing is very, very important when we're talking about predator-prey relationships, especially at that scale.
Is there any rhyme or reason to the brood numbers, like 13 years, 17 years, whatever, 5 years? I don't know how often they come out, but Is there, yeah, other than occasionally they line up, is there any rhyme or reason to it?
There's been lots of speculation, and I don't think that, my understanding, my understanding is that entomologists have not determined, like, yes, this is definitely the reason. But right. I think
there's not like a specific weather event that comes every seven. There's not like a comet that passes by every 78 years. Like, we gotta go. We gotta get there.
Yeah, I mean, on the last year, the year they're supposed to emerge, they come out at when the soil below the is about 6 to 8 inches below the earth reaches about 68 degrees is when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most of the time, again, like the 17 to 13, I think that is, again, the speculation is that it's just, and there's lots of videos and articles about this, but that it's kind of that, it's a prime number. And so just, it comes out infrequently enough that it confuses their predators. And like, so for example, when they do emerge, the predators, you know, they get their huge fill, and there's often a boom in their species. So lots more birds, lots of whatever. But then because the next year, you know, there's not thousands, millions of cicadas out, there's a great decline in their population.
Right.
So it's kind of an interesting phenomenon.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes, you know, they're not becoming a dependent food right. source for these, yeah. these creatures. Like every, when they come out.
Imagine if they came out every year like that.
Right.
And then you would just have higher and higher levels of predators in the area, and which right. would kind of tank the ecosystem a little bit. Can't be that way. But yeah, we're not 100% sure. As Roger said, there's not, we have ideas. Entomologists have ideas, and that's pretty much the leading explanation right now, which makes sense to me, but I'm not a cicada expert.
And as Derek pointed out, squirrels are just terrible at math, so
yeah.
13, yeah, 17, wait, what is it? I don't know.
How many years has it been? I'm not sure.
I know that Derek has a horrible bias against squirrels. He hates squirrels, so you know, don't trust his summation of what squirrels are up to. Although my old boss was sure that the squirrel that lived in his yard was like sentient and was like specifically coming after his collectibles. He was like, the squirrel specifically wants the comics that are in the attic. And I was like, I'm sure that that's not the case. I'm sure the squirrel is just taking whatever paper it finds to make a nest. But that is not what my old boss used to say.
Issue 231. That's what I'm after.
He knew it was a special edition.
Yeah. So Roger shared in the chat a little bit more info about superpowers.
Sorry for the word scramble. That was just copied from another doc. But
no, it's fine.
Yeah, so the squirrel thing too, and oh, another thing too is a lot of these animals, like squirrels in the wild, I can't remember their lifespan, but it's much shorter than these 13 or 17 years. So a lot of these animals, like, again, they aren't.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask, like, squirrels only live a couple of years, right? Like, if they're good at being a squirrel, because most squirrels aren't very good at being squirrels. But if they're good at being a squirrel, they only last a couple of years anyway. So, like, there's whole, like, 3 or 4 generations of squirrels could go by before the cicada boom comes back. They're like, oh, my gosh, great-great-great-grandpappy used to talk about the boom of bugs. He wasn't making it up. He wasn't crazy.
Well, if a squirrel is lucky, they can live to be maybe, like, 7 or 8.
Oh, really?
But that's
really
still missing part of that.
Yeah,
you've got to be an excellent squirrel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably more likely many of them live to be 5. You know, they're going to get eaten by things, and they're going to slow down as they get a little older.
But the cars get a little faster, and they get a little slower.
The hawks get a little younger.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The trees become a little less. There are squirrels that live in my backyard, and there could be 20 back there for all I know, frankly. But there's 2 in particular that we see a lot, and they are Jumpy and Hops Along the Fence, named by my 5-year-old. So.
Awesome. Great names.
Very, very literal names. No, there are no Faye and Cyrus. I mean, there's no glamour.
We might have the same edition, same make and model in our backyard. So, we recently installed a fence, and it's definitely like the preferred squirrel highway.
I love when they hop on fences. It's so cute to watch them, like,
well, we don't have a cat. And I feel like our neighbors to all sides of us either have a very small dog or a cat. And so our yard has become kind of a DMZ for a lot of neighborhood animals. The squirrels go through. Every now and then I'll see like a particularly cute little black and white cat that goes through, and I have no idea what his name is. He has a collar, and so I see him in the like the other houses, but I don't know what his deal is. But yeah, we've become kind of this, there's nobody here to bark me away, so I'll just slip through this backyard.
Very cool. Yeah.
So Roger, why don't you explain to us some of your more descriptive superpowers that you've listed? All right, in the sure.
Yeah, so ideas. I think, again, periodical cicadas, like, they are kind of a fantastic starter bug for a lot of people, just, again, that fear. But back to the, again, they're very chill, very derpy. I don't know, if you're going for the Logan look, though, I don't know how derpy you could make them.
I might just give him, like, those squinty Superman eyes, so that his eyes are implied to be, I put goggles on his head, like he's a 2001 anime character.
Awesome.
Maybe that's just my little kind of shows I was watching in 2001.
The steampunk edition.
Yeah.
Very cool.
A lot of Pokemon and Digimon happening in my life at the time.
Yeah, no, it's great. So strength in numbers, I think, again, I originally thought of like Sandman. I don't know if you've seen a couple of those. Kind of like that forming of like one thing.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Millions of little cicadas making up a giant cicada, mech cicada.
Oh, that'd be a fun superhero.
Yeah. Okay, let me see if I can. A
lot more illustration top, work. But... Top camera. again, kind of going into that, Power Rangers style of type of thing, or there's, again, the metamorphosis. So they have that. They're able to transform, again, the little cicada nymph mech into the full-on winged, amazing creature that it becomes, the cicada.
I like the idea that he's nymphal when he's by himself, but once he gets 100 of his friends, then he becomes the cicada that can fly.
Yeah. Some kind of a transformation, earth, wind, fire, or whatever it is, 16 degrees. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
That is another fun, useless fact, is that a lot of times it's when it rains, they come out. So after a warm rain, they'll often come out, just because the earth is easier to kind of paw at and get up above ground.
So. Yeah, much easier to move through sort of damper soil, and then when they're ready to emerge as adults, that humidity in the air helps them to not get stuck in the exuvium.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
You need high humidity to kind of finish that process.
Again, I'm confused why they're not over here more. I mean, according to Derry, we have
wet over there.
But it's wet.
I mean, supposedly they're. I'm surprised that I'm. I mean, again, a lot of them are kind of just tree dwellers, especially like the annual and dog days and things like that. I think it's just because periodical cicadas, just because there's so many of them, they're like, oh, well, someone's already in the top of the trees, so we got to be down here. And so you actually see them more. But or maybe they just are really, they're smaller. I don't know why they're more ground level. But generally, like the annuals or the dog day ones are kind of up in the trees. You hear them, but you rarely see them from my understanding or my experience anyway.
Yeah, I don't really see them very often at all, unless the last time I saw a dog day cicada was when a cicada killer flew by with one in its arms. I go, oh, there we go.
Just, da, da, da. Yeah, there we go. Well, someone play taps, that guy's done.
Well, what's so cool about this, this year is we have overlapping broods, so it's going to be extra loud, extra crunchy for a few weeks. It's great. My nephew actually sent me a text to ask me about the cicadas a few weeks ago, and he's a turkey hunter. So I said, you're going to have a real good turkey season when that brood comes up. It's going to be plenty of brood.
Because they're going to be fat and happy on cicadas. Yeah. Oh, man.
So good news for the ecosystem, and good news if you're a hunter. you're going to have some fat birds this year. Big turkeys.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've read a lot of articles, and et cetera, et cetera, but like a lot of, like on Facebook, some news station will post an article about the cicadas, and then like the comments are always really interesting, but one of the, or two of the very common comments are, my chickens will be so happy. And also like fishing bait. Yes. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
So people are very excited, and they are, again, and like people make, like actual fly fishing type of lures that are based off of cicadas for that reason. They're just really popular bug food or predator food.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and that overlap to clarify will only happen in a couple states. We're not all, it's not going to happen here. I'm too far east, and I think too far north to get that. I but like mainly, Indiana, I guess, Illinois.
That yeah, I think it's mainly Southern Illinois
area. It, yeah.
Yeah, and even the overlap, again, from what I've read, like University of Connecticut, they have a lot of articles and things about it there, but the overlap itself won't be that much, if any. They're just still like pretty close, but not the, again, I think, so they have a citizen scientist app called Cicada Safari, and it's a great way to kind of get yourself involved. Basically, you go out, you take a picture of your cicada, and that goes into their database of this, like, where are the broods and how are they expanding, contracting, like, et cetera, just like a little bit more data for them.
Oh, awesome.
And what is really helpful, if you are going to nerd out and do that.
And please do. Please nerd out.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. the underside of them is really important because there's different markings. They have kind of, there's technically seven different species of periodical cicada, or magi cicada, which makes it sound more magical and fancy.
That does. That's a good word, magi cicada.
Oh. I picture like sparkling and you know,
like just like yeah, little cute, like ah, it's me. Yeah,
that would be a good illustration. I should.
That would be a good one. Yeah.
But yeah, so the now I'm like, magic cicada, what am I talking about?
Different species.
There we go, yes. So yeah, so there are seven different species, again, kind of depending on if they're 13 or 17 years. And that banding on their abdomen is mostly indicative of like, or you can kind of tell visually of what species they are. Mm-hmm. And so like the septendecimen has a thicker, orange kind of banding, and then some of the other ones it's just straight black. Just depends on the species. So if you do this Cicada Safari app, make sure you get a shot of their underbelly if you can.
Flip them on over, get a little tummy photo. It's good.
Yeah.
well, maybe we can put a link in the show notes to the app, so folks who are in those areas can join the fun. Yes, thank you, Derek. Amanda, how's our hero coming along? What's going on over there?
I'm trying to add stripes to his tummy so you can tell who he is without making it look like he has painted on abs. And I'm not.
I could see them with little painted on abs though.
Like, would that be on brand for him? He's like, meet you guys. I'm also very strong. Let me share what I have of him, and then we can decide what we need to make him look more cicada-ish. And less like a man wearing a lobster costume.
Okay. Oh, man. Our kids and I went and saw SpongeBob the Musical yesterday.
Oh, man. How was that?
It's a surprisingly good
movie. Yeah. Ours was like the junior version, so it's a little more lo-fi probably than what you might have seen Amanda. But go ahead. Tell me your take.
I think it's better than it has business to be. As far as SpongeBob musicals go, like SpongeBob has like this heart song he sings at one point about like being the best he can be, and it's like weirdly inspiring. You're like dang, SpongeBob, you really inspired me in this moment here, SpongeBob. Which I didn't grow up watching SpongeBob, so like my experience with SpongeBob is pretty much only once I'm an adult, but he got me with that one song.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I was like, you know, you go in, you're like, this is going to be trash. And you're like,
yeah, exactly. It's like Shrek the Musical is also very good. And you're like, why is this musical so good? Like, who put the money in this? Meanwhile, hot takes, the Mean Girl musical is not very good. And
I'm not surprised.
Well,
yeah. I'm not surprised. Yeah, what a cash grab that seemed to be.
Derek recently, we were out to dinner with Ellen, of just the zoo of us, and he was complaining about how much removal of musical side notes he has to take out of episodes because I just start talking about musicals. And
he's so like, this is going to be another one.
another moment that's snipped out of me saying that I have opinions about musicals and which ones are good and which ones are cash grabs.
We can do a bonus episode about Cats the musical at some point. I've had to
come up
three different times.
We love to hate Cats.
I'm not going to watch it. It's not happening.
You gotta watch it, Kelly. You gotta see it.
I'm not going to watch Cats. It's not happening.
Okay, but what if Finn watches it?
Yeah, but what if we monetize you watching it?
then I'll do it.
That's what we'll finally get a Patreon for, is to force you
to watch Cats.
To watch Cats, yes. That and A Bug's Life.
And A Bug's Life, yeah. I have not seen A Bug's Life, Roger. That's a running.
I know, that amazes me.
Isn't it? It's wild that she hasn't seen it.
Well, now I feel like it's been too long and I just can't.
Now you're digging in. Yeah,
it's like a point exactly. of Lord. Pride.
Actually, I'm an entomologist who hasn't seen it.
It's been out for 20 years.
It's been 20 years. Yeah, exactly.
20 years.
Sequel will probably come out soon, don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the kids in the hall need the money.
So sorry for the tangent, but the reason I did bring up that was lobsters, SpongeBob, Larry the Lobster, all the guy was wearing was like a red puffy jacket, and I was like, all right, I guess that.
Yes, I will say that the costume department of SpongeBob is they're doing their best, but they're really just trying to like evoke the sensation of of the character. Like SpongeBob is just like a dude in short pants, you know. Yeah. So
oh really,
I'll be so cute.
Oops,
yeah, they're just trying to. It's almost like if you've seen online, a very popular form of fan art is to turn a anthropomorphic character into just a dude, and so the SpongeBob costume department for the musicals, I feel like, took a lot of inspiration from that sort of vibe of like, if SpongeBob was a dude, what would he look like? He'd be a little guy wearing short pants, and that's what he is in the musical. Yeah.
Yep.
This is a podcast where we turn a bug into a dude. I lost my Discord tab because I have too many tabs open.
We got to get a link to your Roger too in the regular chat.
Oh yes. Okay, then let me quickly send it to Derek, and then hold on, it's being annoying.
Just put it in the Discord chat and I'll copy it over to Derek.
Okay, thanks, Derek.
Got it.
Ta-da! I'm looking at your art!
All right, ta-da! Technology!
He's great, Amanda. Look at his little face. He's so excited.
Originally, I had his mouth closed. I was like, no, he needs his mouth open to show that he's a friendly little guy. He's friendly. He's not here to hurt you.
I love the mouth. And I love his little derpy claw adorableness.
Yeah, he's very, very cute. He might rival Bumblebee for cutest.
For cute guys. I like I said, I wanted to kind of get that Logan-esque like posing, but then I wanted him to be friendly still, so I feel like he's kind of he's conflicting with his own pose work, but it's fine.
He's great, and his goggles will be red, right?
Yes.
Are those his Timbals there on his ribs?
Yes, I tried to put his Timbals on his ribs, and then I kind of repeated them on his legs so that he could be super duper loud and just kind of keep that like circle on the head, circle on the body, circle on the legs thing going. Just for
aesthetic,
reasons, just for character, you know, design, as they say.
What colors are you thinking about for?
I'm thinking our he hero. Needs a black bodysuit, but then his like boots and hands will be that kind of orangey color that a lot of the cicadas seem to have on their legs. I use that color all the time though, here on Bugs News Heroes. I feel like I'm always using that orangey terracotta brown.
Well, a lot of bugs are that color. That's just how it works sometimes.
That's how it goes around here. And then, of course, I think I'd make the Timbals and his goggles all red just to give him these pops of color there. And then, like we said, I think he needs to have just like he needs to be able to like clone himself, like just a bazillion of himself and create a big guy that goes around the city. He's like, no! And when he punches stuff, a bunch of other cicadas like fall off.
Oh, that'd be great.
And they're like, no! And they've been sacrificed for the greater good.
I hope that you do give us a drawing of Big Guy at some point.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have to add Big Guy to the marching through the city. Be like, no, my friends. They always move slow.
They're just dripping off of him. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Like the guys who don't cling on hard enough just fall and turn to dust when they hit the ground.
How do you feel about the hero, Roger? Yeah.
Wings? No wings?
Yeah, we talked about making his single form the nymph, and then when he's big, he gains extra abilities because he's big. But I'm happy to add on wings if we feel like he needs the cape design.
Cape.
They all.
He's great. I love his little claws. They are adorable.
I hope he has some way to navigate through life. With you know, hard to make it through this world without opposable thumbs.
He looks like he's having a good time, so I think he's all right.
And one thing to note too is like the nymph. So we talked about the wings and stuff. The nymphs do have like little kind of like nubs,
like nubbies
behind them. Like yeah, they have like little nubbies, and like even on this little plushie, you can kind of see they have like this like pseudo wing. Or Here's my other like little 3D model of a periodical cicada. They have like these little like nubs that kind of poke out. So I don't know how you would ever incorporate that in here, but
I'll find a way.
Or back spikes, maybe, or something else cool on his costume. But another thing, if you want, you can add a Flavor Flav necklace of time.
Yes, absolutely. I'm doing that immediately. It's the flavor of love happening on this cicada. Yes.
Right. Ooh, yeah. I guess the red kind of represents love. Yeah. Yeah.
He's so delicious. I don't know how to put that on him, but he
is. Just have his Tinder phone down there on the.
Oh, yeah. This is another circle to add to his design as well, which, of course, I'm very into.
Perfect for the aesthetic, yeah.
How do you denote 17 years on a clock?
Representational is good. It's all,
It's a clock. It's fine. It's fine.
So out of six legs, then how would you guys rate our buddy the cicada? Six being the best, one being the worst.
You want to go first, Amanda? Because I think my answer's up.
Yeah. Your obvious might be biased. Yeah. I would say. I mean, he's pretty good. I mean, I like that he's so delicious that he. Like has big booms for like other ecos, and you know I love a helpful bug.
You do love a helpful bug.
A helpful.
You
a
always
helpful
give bug. Extra points for helpful bugs.
I don't know. He doesn't harm me personally. Like he doesn't menace my summers. So yeah, 6 out of 6 legs. I'm gonna be generous. Whoa. I think he's. I also always award points for being a particularly buggy bug. Like, if you just look at the guy and you're like, that's a bug. I feel like cicadas really hit that. You're like, look at that buggy guy. And like the eyes on the side of the head, very funny. Very good. Peak cute design. I feel like cicada could be the next axolotl of, like, random creature that kids suddenly love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cicada could take over that throne from axolotl. Yeah, he's good. I like him. I like him a lot, actually. And again, I'm sure that there's people in the South right now who are like, how dare you? The cicada is the worst, you know? But for me, where I'm unharassed, I'd say success.
Roger? Yeah,
it's interesting because, I mean, obviously I give it a 6 out of 6. there's lots of reasons why. And like, one of the things is it is like an awesome cultural icon. And in, I mean, again, not periodical cicadas, because those are specific to just the kind of west of the Mississippi or east of the Mississippi U.S., but cicadas in especially like Asian culture are this awesome symbol of like resurrection and rebirth. And
that's
metamorphosis.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, so you can find like little jade necklaces and little like statues and things like that of the cicadas, just because of their they're kind of revered. And there's a really weird and awesome book by Sean Tan about, it's just called Cicada, and it's about this like entrenched office worker, and he's so it's a cicada that is an entrenched office worker, and he's so sad and his life is so miserable and his boss is abusive and whatever, and then he goes and he climbs the top of this building and he emerges and jumps off into a beautiful
cicada. Oh,
like,
very nice.
Weird. It's like I don't know. It's cool. It's interesting. My first take was I'm like, oh, suicide. That's terrible. And then I'm like, I guess he emerged and flew off, and it was a good thing instead. Yeah.
He was just following his instincts to the highest point.
Yeah,
so he could be free.
Yeah. So. Well, they're also used in jewelry. You can end like crafts. Yeah. Lots of people use their exuvia in things, which is kind of cool.
A question we often come back to on this podcast, Kelly, is that should we be eating them too?
They are edible. You can humans
so edible according to according to Cicada Apocalypse, incredibly edible.
I've never eaten one personally.
I mean, I'm looking at him.
Would you eat one, Amanda?
I think he could be juicy. I've seen less juicy bugs that get eaten. I feel like he could cricket flour it up pretty easily.
Would you like just eat a whole one though?
I think if you tempura fried them, you could get through them pretty easily.
Yeah, you'd go for it. When you get emergencies like this, there's always chefs who are like, I've created this new recipe on cicadas, and this is how you could eat them.
This is my cicada cake.
Yeah.
Again, I got to come back to you. There's probably bugs that are delicious, and we just have no idea yet. Because like for a long time, lobsters were seen as like, ugh.
Someone knows. Food. Someone's eating a bug. If there's a bug out there, someone's eating it.
We need a Dr. Schmidt, RIP.
We love you, Dr. Schmidt.
We love you, Dr. Schmidt. But we need that sort of dedication to the cause, but for eating bugs.
For eating bugs.
Instead of being stung by bugs.
It could be you, Amanda.
Delicious in Dungeon. Make it delicious
in Dungeon.
Make it delicious in Dungeon, but for bugs.
For bugs,
for bugs. That's what I need.
I would caution against eating too many because you don't want to remove too many from the environment because that's food for the animals that need those, that really like depend on some of these emergencies. But if you want to try one, I think go for it.
So give them a few days to get their fill. Then you
once they're satiated, then it's our turn to be apex predator of the cicada.
Roger, have you ever eaten one?
I'm not.
On accident or on purpose?
I have not. I'm planning to hopefully do that when I get out there. I'm planning to visit Chicago area. If you all are looking for a person who is really interested in eating insects, there's someone called Brooklyn Bugs, that's their handle on Instagram and other places. But he is an awesome advocate for insect and, you know, sustainability, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, Derek also mentioned, don't eat cicadas if you're allergic to shellfish.
Yeah.
I think part of that is the mercury levels, just like, you know, sitting in the earth for 17 years, you do get some hard metals in your body.
Oh, interesting that that's the reason. I would have immediately assumed that it was because they're, whatever it is in shrimp you're allergic to, you're also going to be allergic to in the land shrimp, aka cicada here.
I don't know the exact reason, but I assume it is.
Mercury is also a good reason not to eat something.
They do end up containing metals. So it's maybe you don't eat more than one. I don't know.
And that didn't even occur to me until I talked to Chris Simon. She is an entomologist at the University of Connecticut. And she was like, people at like Western cultures have reached out to us and like, hey, you all have this amazing like emergence of millions of cicadas. How can we harvest them commercially? And she's like, don't do that.
It'd be really hard to grow them commercially if they only come out every 17 years as well. You're like, all right, I've set up my cicada farm. Now to wait.
I have found a recipe called singing sushi, and I will put that in the episode description.
Awesome. Excellent.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Who was that?
Was that Desi? Father, I crave nourishment, Father.
Derek's kitties are always meowing in the background. They're adorable.
That part of why he's muted is there's always too much cat noise.
It's a good problem to have.
I feel like I've seen videos of dogs walking up to their owners with like a tiny scream emanating from their mouth. Like, put it down, Sparky. And he's like, opens his mouth and like two or three cicadas come flying out.
Yeah, absolutely. Popcorn shrimp of the earth.
I'm telling you, some like just batter and fry them. I feel like you could get on it.
Yeah. I think I would also give them 6 out of 6.
Yes.
They're cool.
A clean sweep. 6 out of 6.
I feel I feel pressured though. I was pressured into the 6.
I'm so sorry. Well, I guess I have nothing to take away for, if that makes
they're
sense.
They're great. They're really
like if
cute.
I'm starting at 6 and don't take anything away, he stays at 6.
Yeah, I mean, again, super cool.
So where can we find to purchase Cicada Apocalypse? Why don't you give us the whole spiel about like where to find it, who's publishing it? It sounds like it's you from start to finish. So let us know what the specs are.
Yep. Da-da-da-da. Cicada Apocalypse. You can find it at cicadaapocalypse.com. So I am selling it out of my own shop. Self-publishing, all that good stuff. It does have a couple of fun perks. It has a nice glossy, shiny cover. So it has a little bit of spot gloss.
Ooh, pretty.
And that's great. Fun. It also, on the inside, again, if you go to cicadaapocalypse.com, there's a link to the book right there. And there's also my Instagram handle, @cicadaapocalypse. And again, Cicada Apocalypse is merged word, so there's not two A's in the middle. Cicada Apocalypse, it's just Cicada Apocalypse. But inside the book, there is a little flip book, and it has I won't show you here, but if you look, there's a gift on the, I'm like awkward trying to show it on the screen, but it flips to, it shows the emergence of a periodical cicada. And one of the things we didn't touch on, I forgot, that is kind of interesting is they use when they emerge, they use their gravity to always compel them. So they always want a vertical surface. Or a lot of them emerge like completely upside down on a tree branch, or like on a leaf or something. And so they optimize gravity to kind of like flop out and then do it. So that you can see that in the flip book. And yeah, it's fun. So would recommend, obviously. I'm working on getting some reviewers and all that fun stuff. You all have read it. You said your kid loved it. That's cool. That's awesome.
My 5-year-old liked it a lot, but you know, he's a nasty little bug boy.
I mean, one of the things I was trying to accomplish with the book is like, it starts off again. It's a lot of people are afraid of of insects and things. And I love that you all had, all bugs go to Kevin because he's kind of an insect advocate. And you all are too, but it's kind of, exposure makes you a lot less afraid of things. And so Cicada Apocalypse, it takes this thing. People are afraid. People already say Cicada Apocalypse. It's, you know, this big swarm. They think it's a plague, but it takes this thing that's kind of terrifying, at least initially to these squirrels. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, as you go through the adventure, you learn like, oh wait, they aren't that terrifying. They're actually an amazing food source. They're pretty cool. They're peaceful. They're symbol of rebirth. They're awesome. They don't have any, they aren't bad at all. They're just like a boon. That's why, again, 6 out of 6, 3 6-out-of-6s ratings here. So yeah, there's just lots of really good stuff with periodical cicadas. And they also have a really big cult, or not big, big to me, for insects, cult following. Like when I was in DC in 2021, like there's, in bookshops and everywhere, like there's paintings of them. There's like libraries have full displays about periodical cicadas and all about them. They had like one library I went to had like a bucket of the shells and like, take these home and do a craft with them.
Cool.
And
yeah, they're exciting. They're kind of exciting, you know, especially with these big periodic emergences. Why not get the kids involved and excited? And yeah, they're just cool. They're cool little dudes.
Yeah, and I have, even on cicadaapocalypse.com, again, I have put up a couple of activity pages. So there's coloring pages. I even have like comic templates. I have a couple of the like little pieces and parts of just things you can do. There's a 3D cicada paper craft that you can do. So things to get, again, like if you're a librarian or anything like that, print these off and just sit, or bookstore or whatever, print these off. And even if you don't get the book, like these are free. So just print these off and share them with your kids.
What month are we expecting our buddies?
Yeah. So it kind of depends on, so the, again, since it's temperature dependent, we don't know. But it's, generally speaking, it's end of May, early June.
Yeah.
And so okay. mid, it's again, it's a wide spectrum just because of the temperature, but it's like mid-May to mid-June. But generally speaking, like I'm planning to go out to Chicago in early June. 2021, they started emerging end of May. So,
Yeah. I was out for a wedding in 2021 in Cincinnati, and they were everywhere.
They were waiting for everywhere. You, Kelly. Yeah. They, you're the swarm causer.
So. It's true. I just got to walk through that city, and then they will come. That's just how it works.
All right. So please feel free to check out Cicada Apocalypse. We, will, of course, will link all of the relevant links to where you can purchase and where you can find it and where you can color mm-hmm. pages and where you can do activities that Roger has so nicely created for all of us to do. And, of course, you can find us at Bugs Need Heroes at all relevant handles, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit.
Oh, please send us your cicada photos when the emergence
send
comes.
Send us cicada photos. Yeah. We will remind you in late May to mid-June. Send us new cicada photos. Anything else?
Or cicada safari. Send them there.
Yeah. We'll often take them. Remember that there are four lights and that we love you. Neither of those things are a lie. Go for it. Bugs Need Heroes was created by Derek Conrad and Kelly Zimmerman. Hosted by Amanda Allen Knighty and Kelly Zimmerman. Bugs Need Heroes is produced and edited by Derek Conrad, with some assistance from Chelsea Bodden and a few cats. Character art is by Amanda Allen Knighty. Our music is Ladybug Castle by Roll Music. Got a bug question? Email us at bugsneedheroes@gmail.com. Check us out at bugsneedheroes.com, and most of the socials are under Bugs Need Heroes. Thank you to the Entomological Society of America for the Chrysalis Fund grant. Sorry, I lost my Discord tab because I have too many tabs open.